From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Dr. Laurie, the architect of change, joins us. Now, if you're listening to us tonight at up until 11 p.m. at KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles, they're going to have more transmitter maintenance tonight. Should be the last time, but switch on over at 11 o'clock to the iHeartRadio app, and you can listen to the whole show. Here's what's happening. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, is warning that the Omicron variant may not spell the end of the COVID-19 pandemic. Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease, says that natural vaccination or immunity via previous infection might not be as effective as some believe. Like the emergence of Omicron, he says there is potential for a new variant to emerge in the future that can bypass the natural immunity provided by infection from the new strain. The CDC director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, has acknowledged her agency's poor messaging in recent weeks as the Omicron variant continues the surge in the United States. Truly, their messaging has really been screwed up. They don't know what they're saying. The chief executives of major U.S. passenger and cargo carriers warning of an impending catastrophic aviation crisis in less than 36 hours when AT&T and Verizon are set to deploy their new 5G service. The airlines warn that the new C-band 5G service, which is slated to begin on Wednesday, could render a significant number of wide-body aircraft unusable and massive cancellations. Hackers temporarily shut down dozens of Ukrainian government websites, causing no major damage, but adding to simmering tensions while Russia amasses troops on the Ukrainian border. Separately, in a rare gesture to the United States at a time of chilly relations, Russia said it had arrested members of a major ransomware gang that targeted U.S. entities. Let's check in with our expert on the Internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, what do you mean by all this? What's it mean?
Yeah, well, this is really quite fascinating. I mean, we can start with the fact that we're sort of looking here at what is almost a sci-fi scenario of cyber attacks becoming physical attacks, because as you pointed out, and of course, as we all know, there is tremendous tension right now between Russia and Ukraine, and of course, the U.S. is involved in this also. With Putin massing troops along the Ukrainian border and a lot of observers speculating that he's planning to invade. Now, of course, he hasn't said he's going to invade. Similarly, he says, or the Kremlin says, that Russia is not behind the attacks on these Ukrainian sites. Many independent observers suspect that Russia probably is. And there's a logic to this, because if you want to create the kind of environment where if you were going to invade a country, people would already be upset. They'd be upset with their government because the sites were down, all these kinds of things. One way to kind of seed that kind of discontent would be through cyber attacks. So we don't know for sure that Russia's involved. But if we take this along with the other fact that you just mentioned, which is also kind of interesting, that suddenly, I mean, we talked about those ransomware attacks several times back when they occurred,
right,
the big one.
Right.
And it was known at that time that the group that was involved apparently had ties to Russia. And the question was asked at that point, why hasn't Russia done anything about it? I mean, Russia was saying the Russian government isn't behind it, but a lot of people were saying, well, if these hackers are in Russia, can't you get them somehow? Well, now, all of a sudden, while all this other stuff is going on with Ukraine, suddenly we're told that some of those ransomware hackers were arrested. Now, maybe this is all a coincidence. Maybe it's all just happens to occur at the same time. But when we're looking at a real-world scenario of potentially the military invasion of Ukraine by Russia, and suddenly these cyber attacks occur, and suddenly there's sort of this diversionary announcement that the ransomware hackers were suddenly arrested inside Russia. That seems a bit much for coincidences. Now, that's not to say, you know, that it's not a coincidence, but we're gonna have to watch this very, very closely, because a lot of things seem to be aligning here, and where this is going to end up is anyone's guess.
All right, thanks, Lauren. And you know what I say, there are no coincidences. Hundreds marched across the Frederick Douglass Memorial Bridge in Washington, D.C. on Martin Luther King Jr. Day today and called on Congress to pass voting legislation, which seems to be in jeopardy. In 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. made this historic speech.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream.
5 years after that, he was gunned down by an assassin. Saturday's eruption of an underwater volcano near Tonga in Polynesia was likely the biggest recorded anywhere on the planet in more than 30 years. Dramatic images. There was a tsunami that wiped out the entire western coast of their main island out there. Just incredible story. At coasttocoastam.com, in the news, you will find a story about a three-eyed cow born in India that has been dubbed a divine miracle when it was claimed to be a reincarnation of a Hindu god Shiva. The rare calf was born with an extra eye on its forehead and four nostrils, sparking a frenzy with locals. We've got the whole story there for you in the news at coasttocoastam.com. A potentially hazardous asteroid bigger than any building in the world will pass by Earth on Tuesday. Not only is it the biggest known asteroid coming within 2.3 million miles of us, but it's so massive that you might be able to see it in the sky. With a little more, here's Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. We can see it with the naked eye, Stephen.
Well, George, you can, but unfortunately the light of the full moon may hamper that.
Uh-huh.
But we begin, of course, with space and our weekly James Webb Telescope update. George, this amazing spacecraft we now know as the James Webb Telescope keeps amazing space scientists and the general public. And just to give everybody the live update, it's now some 827,000 miles from the Earth, with less than 75,000 miles to go to reach that semi-stationary position. We call it L2, the Lagrange point 2. But temperatures on the sun side of the spacecraft are now measured at about 132 degrees Fahrenheit, and on the dark side, the important side where all the optics and the electronics are, minus 338 degrees Fahrenheit. But the spacecraft is now fully deployed, George, with its 18 mirrors being fine-tuned in place. And the telescope will arrive at this L2 position, we hope, on January the 23rd. But observations of the universe will begin in June and July of this year. But from Earth, the telescope is moving through the stars, George, of the constellation Monoceros, known as the Unicorn, just a few degrees to the lower left of the bright star Betelgeuse in Orion. But sadly, just like the asteroid, probably not visible to the naked eye or even a powerful telescope, but it's good for locating the position of where it is in space. But in astronomy, diamond rain may be common on these gas giants, Uranus and Neptune. They don't get a lot of news, but the gas giants, Uranus and Neptune, may provide some surprises below their cloud tops. Both have temperatures at their core, that is, both Uranus and Neptune, of probably around 12,000 degrees Fahrenheit. They're mostly made of water, ammonia, and methane. And their pressures on the inside of these planets are some 6 million times that of the Earth's atmosphere. What am I building up to, George? Under that pressure, the molecules can break up, releasing carbon. And these carbon atoms can form large patterns of a strange rain. Yeah, you guessed it, diamond rain, like celestial hail. And that floats back to the surface of Uranus and Neptune, just like a modern lab-created diamond factory. Isn't that amazing? If true, totally incredible. And to follow up on your story about the massive undersea volcano, it has some space-related interest. Saturday's Hunga Tonga submarine volcano explosion sent a massive shockwave around the world, as you reported, with loud booms heard in New Zealand, Australia, and as well as Alaska, too.
Jeez.
But a tsunami of 4 to 6 feet high was recorded in places as far as California, Peru, and Chile. Now, this is unusual, George, as earthquakes typically produce tsunamis, not volcanoes, but similar in many ways as to what a small asteroid impact might be like if it hit the ocean. Back in 1883, the Krakatoa volcano was off the charts with allegedly 100-foot tsunami waves and loud 310-decibel blasts heard 3,000 miles away. But this is very interesting because it has a relationship to what would happen if an asteroid would hit the ocean. Tonight, for the live sky, there's a beautiful full wolf moon around the United States and around the listening area. But Earth gets passed by the asteroid you mentioned before, 1994 PC-1. It's 3,600 feet in diameter and passes the Earth a little over a million miles away. On the 18th, tomorrow or today, wherever you're listening, at 4:51 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if this object were to hit the Earth, scientists say that it would create a crater 12 miles in diameter, to say the least. More information always at our website relationship with drskyshow@gmail.com is our website and email. But the website that we tell people to go to is theskylive.com. Watch, George. Always remember to keep your eyes to the skies. I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Sky. What is happening with mandates and restrictions to all of us? In a moment, Jonathan Emore joins us, author of The Authoritarians. He talks about restrictions next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Jonathan Emore back with us. He's been practicing constitutional and administrative law before federal courts and agencies since 1985. Having begun his career as an attorney in the Federal Communications Commission during the administration of President Ronald Reagan, Emord has maintained an abiding conviction to achieve full First Amendment protection for the freedoms of speech and press. He's got a number of books out, including The Authoritarians. Jonathan, this is an amazing story. These mandates, these restrictions, it's unbelievable.
They're horrendous, George, and they make no sense. They're actually very counterproductive. And, of course, they invade our civil liberties, and they treat us as if a disease is sufficient under the Constitution to suspend our rights, when, in fact, there's no constitutional exception from protection of our rights for accommodating a disease. And it's a major power grab. It's a major move on the part of various state, local, and government or federal government officials to take away our liberties. And it's meant, apparently, to be permanent, because the science right now really militates in the other direction. We ought to be removing these restrictions, and we ought to be getting back to normal life and allowing individuals to pursue what's in their own best interest rather than having a one-size-fits-all forced mandate for vaccination. And that's just ruinous. It's destroying our economy. It's ruining our children. And it's the worst possible way to deal with this. It just complicates matters and makes people suffer much more than they otherwise would have to in dealing with this pandemic.
And Jonathan, it's not just happening here. It's happening worldwide.
It is. It's all over the world. Australia is a very good example of abuse. Canada, our northern neighbors, are suffering enormous restrictions. Of course, those in the rest of the world are suffering, too, in major urban areas in China. China's horrendous right now in preparation for the Olympics. People are being essentially locked into their homes. And that's not surprising in an authoritarian country that's dominated by communism. But it is surprising, I think, in the Western world, particularly in Australia, that they so readily chose to abandon our protection for civil liberties in exchange for the assurance that people follow in lockstep an approach to public health. This is a matter not unlike any other major disease that has hurt our country. We've looked to private physicians and individuals to pursue their own best interest through private means, recognizing that each patient is different. Each person has a different medical background. There shouldn't be one Dr. Joe Biden dictating that everyone in the country get vaccinated. There ought to be we ought to respect individual freedom of choice, and we ought to respect the alternatives that physicians wish to take in particular cases. Instead, there's this mass movement for censorship of treatments in order to maximize vaccination. It makes no sense. We've likely peaked on vaccination. We're coming close to it. People are finding that treatments are essential early in the disease. That's exactly what the medical authorities are telling us. And yet treatments are not available, and treatments are discouraged. People going into the hospitals right now with Omicron are frequently told to go home. They're told if they've been vaccinated, your condition will be mild. Well, that's not true in every case. And, in fact, many people who have underlying medical conditions will not be free of very serious long-term threats. They may survive this thing and likely will. But what are the long-term consequences? They should be cared for individually. Physicians shouldn't be intimidated away from treating patients. We shouldn't have a bifurcated system where the unvaccinated are discriminated against, that thanks to Joe Biden. We shouldn't have a system where people of one race are given preference in getting treatments. All these things are gross violations of our liberties, and we ought to instead recognize we're all Americans, we're all in this together. Omicron is the great equalizer. It infects people who are vaccinated and unvaccinated alike, and we ought to deal with this as a disease, not as a political matter. We ought to allow doctors to treat patients early in the disease with effective treatments. There are a whole host of them. There's ivermectin, there's Paxlovid, there's monoclonal antibodies, fluvoxamine,
hydroxychloroquine,
and more. And we ought to let doctors choose the best method to treat a patient and respect those decisions.
Well, some of those doctors, Jonathan, are losing their licenses when they prescribe the things you just talked about.
You bet. Many doctors are under attack by medical boards for ivermectin. Patients prescribed ivermectin are having difficulty getting it from pharmacies because pharmacies are being intimidated by their boards to avoid making available ivermectin except for parasitic infections. This is a movement.
Have you ever seen this before?
We've never seen a situation in American history where the right of a physician and a patient to receive the treatment that they want for a common ailment has been so regulated out of existence as it is happening right now. It's just horrendous. It's an abuse we've never seen. It's because there's a line that has been crossed. The president has been quick to do that. He's crossed this line that he can act unilaterally with dictatorial power. He doesn't have to wait for Congress, doesn't have to follow the will of the people. He can simply act and enforce his will. And that authoritarian approach is mirrored, of course, by many governors and by many local jurisdictions as well, particularly in California and New York. It's just been horrible for people.
The president has blamed people who are unvaccinated for spreading COVID. What's your take on that?
Well, that's just patently false. I mean, COVID can be carried by the vaccinated and transmitted by the vaccinated. But, you know, when you look at this thing, George, from a big picture standpoint, this is not a situation where we should be in a chronic state of fear and lamentation. Omicron is actually an amazing opportunity for us to get out of this if government will simply allow medical authorities to deal with it in the right way.
Of course, now Fauci says we're going to get more variants worse than Omicron.
Well, that's sheer speculation. He's drumming up fear. That's his business. He has made himself into a focal point by being the mouthpiece or oracle of medical wisdom for the nation. He's not that, and he's proven himself wrong again and again and again. First it was no masks, then it was one mask, then it was three masks, then it's back to, oh, no, you can use KN95 masks only. All of this nonsense when, in point of fact, they've known from the start that a nanoparticle is going to pass through even a thread and that
right.
Masks will do virtually nothing. There's no scientific evidence to support that masks are effective means to prevent transmission of this disease. And yet treatment information has been coming out from the start of this and has proven to be the most effective means of stopping this virus. If you're treated early, your chances of being hospitalized is greatly reduced, and your survival rate goes up. And yet, rather than emphasize treatment or allow physicians the freedom to treat this disease aggressively early, they have thought that would be a bane to getting people vaccinated. And they've made vaccination a political end-all, be-all. And that now, in the face of this great evidence of the effectiveness of treatments and of the relative mildness of Omicron, and by the way, Omicron has been shown in two recent studies to have crossover effects that reduces substantially your risk of getting Delta. So more serious strains may be blocked and by becoming infected.
Hold on for a second, Jonathan. We're at a break. We'll come back and talk more. Jonathan Emord with us as we talk about our rights. Next hour, we'll take your calls. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie back with Jonathan Emord. Jonathan, I'm not opposed to vaccines at all. I am opposed to mandates forcing people to get injections that they don't want. It's their decision. And I was delighted to see the Supreme Court last week strike down the mandate rule. What do you think?
Yes, I quite agree with you on that. And I think that the Supreme Court got it right, at least in the National Federation of Independent Businesses versus Department of Labor decision. And that was a major decision, 6-3. And the OSHA emergency temporary standard was there held neither supported by the statute, the enabling statute, nor by independent constitutional power of the executive. And the court very clearly made it known to the president that, once again, he's exceeded his constitutional powers and invaded that of the legislature by creating this essentially new law that would have really harmed us. 80 million people would have been affected and would have been forced to either be vaccinated, tested weekly, or terminated from their employment. That, fortunately, came to an end. Unfortunately for us, in a narrow 5-4 decision in Biden versus Missouri, the court upheld the CMS mandate for healthcare workers in institutions that are paid by Medicare and Medicaid and Medicare. And that's 10 million hospital workers who are now forced to be vaccinated unless they can prove a medical or religious exemption. That decision is really, in some respects, conflictive with the other decision, and is a peculiar one. If it weren't for Justice Kavanaugh and Roberts fleeing from the conservative majority, that too would have been struck down. But unfortunately, they did not stick with the same rationale that was in National Federation of Business.
How could some cities mandate for restaurants and other places and get away with it?
Yeah, frequently they violate their own Administrative Procedure Acts, or they do so in a manner analogous to the president in violation of the constitutional separation of powers by invading the province of the city councils or the state law, or also the it's a power that is oftentimes one that is most appropriate or reserved to the state legislature. The whole approach is just so wrongheaded and really ignorant of the developments in science and in the course of this pandemic. I mean, since December, George, of 2021, almost all new cases are Omicron cases. 95.4% of new COVID-19 cases in the United States are now Omicron cases. And according to CDC, the Omicron variant, compared with its Delta predecessor, poses a 53% lower risk of symptomatic hospitalization, a 74% lower risk of ICU admission, and a 91% lower risk of death. Now, the overwhelming majority of Americans are likely to be infected with Omicron, but Omicron ends up being a great equalizer in that it infects the vaccinated and unvaccinated alike, which destroys this political narrative of the Biden administration and many governors and city mayors that COVID is a disease of the unvaccinated. Well, it isn't. It is now very clearly, by overwhelming numbers, a disease that affects everybody, vaccinated or unvaccinated. And we are close to the end of this massive peak in Omicron cases, with cities like New York, Chicago, and Boston heading into the endemic phase. And that's our way out of this, to take it from a virulent, lethal disease through through the presence of new variants into a endemic phase where it's far less lethal, albeit more contagious. And look at the numbers we've got. This is extraordinary. 300 million Americans are either vaccinated or have natural immunity. 20 to 30 million are neither vaccinated nor naturally immune. 64% of Americans are fully vaccinated. 36.3% of those have received a booster shot. 76% of Americans have had at least one vaccine dose. Some 150 to 160 million Americans thus have immunity prior to infection. Now, Omicron will hit them all. But the big news about Omicron, this is from Johns Hopkins study, and then it's a second study on the same thing. T-cell immunity from Omicron and from Delta crossover. And that study shows that Omicron immunity gives four times the immunity against Delta. And these studies reveal that Omicron is not only more common than Delta, but is actually crowding out Delta. So we do have this evolution that epidemiologists have said and that has affected every coronavirus from the start, which is it starts out lethal, it evolves into something that is like the flu, and then it becomes a seasonal illness. And that's what is happening with COVID.
Israel says the fourth boost for Omicron does not work. They just announced it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely, look at the third boost, actually, I guess the first time you're boosted, the best information they can get is a 90-day immunity, right? After 90 days, it starts plummeting. And now this new study from Israel is saying, hey, look, the fourth boost may be ineffectual. Now, people shouldn't panic because there are very effective treatments out there. The problem is politicians are standing in the way. And we have got to change that. They have got to stand down, and we have got to see treatment centers all over the place. In an ideal universe, George, the government would pivot from this ridiculous mantra that everyone on Earth has to be vaccinated, that there has to be 100% vaccination, in the face of evidence that vaccines are not the answer. And they would instead pivot to treatment, because we've got these very effective treatments, and they, for example, with ivermectin, not only is it very effective early treatment, it's extraordinarily safe. And if they allowed, like Florida has, treatment centers all over the place with physicians free to prescribe as they think appropriate in individual cases based on the medical history of a patient, and they had the drugs available, government got out of the way in the drugs and pushed the drugs for like Paxlovid, we would have people who came down with this thing knowing where to go immediately in their neighborhood, getting tested, establishing that they have it, and immediately treated. And we would save thousands of lives. And we would see people overcoming this thing in shorter periods of time. And this would truly become a nuisance like the flu, but not a terror like COVID was at the start.
Well, is there something sinister behind all of this, Jonathan, or is this just uneducated leaders?
It is sinister because, look, when you have a public health authority say definitively to you something that at the time it is stated is regarded by the medical community as either false or as of dubious scientific validity, and they insist upon it, and then you have them take away your liberties rather than educate. You know, the proper thing here is to give people full information, to open up the channels of communication, to have wide open and robust scientific debate. That's how we've innovated. That's how we get to new solutions to these problems. When you stifle discussion like they are through big tech in collusion with the government, when you have them stifling communication, when you have them restricting the availability of treatments. These are affirmative measures that they know cost people's lives. When they intimidate physicians out of practicing medicine, when they take the position that the government can establish a treatment, a one-size-fits-all treatment for all 340 million Americans, that approach is dumb, of course, but it's a way to gain extraordinary power. If I can make you fear exercise of your liberties, if you will relinquish them to me based on that fear, and if you will be beholden to me for answers that can affect whether you live or die, I have acquired massive control, greater control than would ever be possible under our Constitution, and I become a dictator. And there's no leading Democrat politician in the United States today, sadly to say, who doesn't buy into this narrative.
Are they being tricked and deceived?
I think some of them are naive, but frankly, anybody with a scruple in their brains should realize what this is all about. And when you're sitting in the catbird seat like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden, they know full well what they're doing. They appreciate this. It's the Rahm Emanuel story that you never let a crisis go to waste. They're taking advantage of it. They're expanding government spending. They're creating new government programs. They're intimidating people. And they're achieving the end of making people afraid to be free. We can never allow that to hold in this country. We've got to reject it. We are a free people. We are a courageous people. We understand there's a disease, but that's not a foundation for relinquishing our constitutional rights. If anything, it's a justification to strengthen them. Because if you have faith in freedom, you understand that innovation, thousands of private decisions, and the ability to get products to the market is the way to achieve an end to this. We have to adapt to it. We can't freeze our country into a static state of no innovation and expect to overcome this. We're seeing already the treatments are the way out. And there are many more in the pipeline. And a lot of these should be allowed to get out there. And there are a lot of therapies that can be used to minimize the long-term consequences of this. But this one-size-fits-all vaccinate mantra is not the answer. And science now very clearly shows that, because Omicron affects the vaccinated and the unvaccinated alike, because people who are vaccinated can still carry and transmit the virus.
It doesn't stop them from getting the virus, does it?
No, it doesn't stop them from getting the virus, and it merely underscores the necessity for treatment.
But does it mitigate the virus in terms of it's not as dangerous if you're vaccinated?
Well, you know, that's the rhetoric. That's the political rhetoric that is out there. It may, but we don't have definitive proof of that, George. It depends heavily on your underlying medical condition.
Sure. It's too early in the game. It really is. So, I don't know. Where do we go?
Well, I think that the solution to this problem lies in common sense and in allowing freedom to reign. We have got to allow individuals to have freedom to decide what is in their own best interest. We can't dictate to them. We cannot mandate. We can't mandate that all children in public schools wear masks. There's no evidence to support the efficacy of that. And yet it's destroying children. It's causing children to lose, particularly in the youngest ages, that all critical human interaction that comes from facial expression, that comes from the ability to communicate freely with their chums. We have got to preserve that. And we're suffering from a massive uptick in depression and suicide.
As a matter of fact, after you tonight, I have a psychologist who's coming on to talk about that very subject with what's happening right now.
And yet, look, while that is an epidemic, while that is a true threat to the lives of every child in this country, you've got no reaction from the Biden administration, no reaction from these city mayors, no reaction from the governors in these states that have mandates. And yet that is more lethal than the virus.
That's one of the reasons why his approval rating has plummeted.
He's wooden, he's too old, he's inept, and he is incapable of dealing with this. He's turned over the authority to His Highness Anthony Fauci, who is one of the most disreputable people. He's proven himself to be that. He was intimately engaged in this gain-of-function research. He lied the whole time.
They funded the Wuhan lab. Why is Rand Paul the only politician screaming about that?
That's right. Why is Rand Paul the only politician? Isn't that telling? Where is the courage? Why don't we stand up against this tyrant? Why don't we get rid of him? I mean, look, he ought to be out of government. Time for him to retire.
Where's the government whistleblower who cut the check and sent it out there? Or wired
exactly.
The money, whatever they did.
And look, Don't tell me that Anthony Fauci doesn't understand that the Wuhan lab is an agent of the PLA and that the, all business in China is that way, and that he's dealing with the enemy of the United States, a nation that is intent on destroying this country and giving them the means by which to fuel their bioweapons program. I mean, he could have chosen another place in the world to do this research, even though the research itself is outrageous.
I agree.
He knew from the start that it posed the risk of a pandemic.
That makes no sense. It's illogical.
It's illogical. He knew from the start that this research posed a risk of a pandemic. He said that. And he said scientific research is more important. Oh, really? Who are you to make that decision for all of us? Who are you to make that decision for all of the people who suffered and died from this disease worldwide? Who are you to say that their lives are less important than some academic research into vaccination?
Are they going to mandate vaccine passports to fly?
They're trying to. They want to.
That'll get shot down, too, in the courts, won't it?
Absolutely. I would fully expect that. I would certainly hope that. And the nice thing about this decision, Federation decision, is that the court very quickly recognized in implementing its stay that this was an abuse of power, like it was when Biden used HHS to impose the rent moratorium. You can't just remove people's rights to their lives, liberty, and property as president of the United States. You don't have that power. It's protected against by not only the structure of the Constitution, which is the point and issue here, but also by our civil rights and the Bill of Rights. And a tyrant is not what the American people voted for. And he needs an education very quickly that he is not going to succeed as a tyrant in this country. Medical freedom is as truly a part of our liberties to life, protected by the 5th and 14th Amendments of the Constitution, as any other right that we have protection for. And there's no power in this president to take it away.
Jonathan, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be back. We'll talk more, and we're going to open up the phone lines, too.